This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And a very good Saturday morning to you. We are back. Tom Lavero, I'm Chris Russell. Jim Jester on the other side of the glass. We're with you until noon on this very, very, very hot already, Tommy. Saturday morning, I think the old car temperature got up to about 89 degrees at 8:30. That's generally not a good sign if you don't like the heat and the humidity. And yes, I realize it is July 20th, and this is to be expected, but generally not a good sign when it's already up to 89 degrees on the old car temp before 8:30.
You know, generally the heat doesn't bother me, but this is like, this is Africa hot, as as Matthew Broderick said in Biloxi Blues.
Yeah.
And
not
this,
good.
This is pretty hot.
Yeah.
And apparently I've read somewhere that 9 out of the last 10 summers in this area have been the hottest summers on record.
Really?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel that way. I know everybody complains about the heat and humidity around here. And of course, when it's nuclear hot, I do too. I've lived in some really hot places. Miami for a year, or between Fort Lauderdale and Miami for a year.
Right.
Las Vegas for almost 2 years. My son Tyler was born in Vegas. I've lived in some really hot places. I've lived in some really cold places, especially during the winter. Traveling around, you know, the country, a lot of, with the Redskins, you know, New Orleans for Robert Griffin's debut. It was 99 degrees on September 8th when we arrived at 4 p.m. You know, it's a culture shock, the humidity. I don't feel like the weather around here is as bad as people make it out to be, with limited exception for a week, 10 days, whatever it is. So I don't know how the averages work out. Maybe that's kind of how you arrive, not you, how they arrive at determining such a thing. All I know is around here it's bad for about a week and a half, 2 weeks, and then it goes back to being, well, summer, okay, fine, tolerable, and we can get on with our merry selves.
Oh, hopefully. Usually. Hopefully it goes back.
Usually.
Yeah.
But it's not New Orleans heat and humidity. It's not Alabama heat and humidity.
No.
Is I guess, the general point that I'm trying to make.
Yeah, but it's pretty close. I think it's pretty close.
It feels that way this week.
Yeah.
I can tell you that much.
Yeah. How hot was it for you this week down at Busch Gardens?
Well, Tommy, I'm still recovering. I got to be honest with you. So I plan this. You know, I get my kids for a couple of weeks out of the summer. I go back and forth, see them during the non-summer, during the school year. And so, you know, I try and find something fun to do. Can't take a week off or anything
like
that.
You mean hanging out with you alone just isn't fun?
Well, sometimes, believe it or not, Tommy, sometimes I'm an angry bear.
I find that hard to believe.
Sometimes, believe it or not, I complain.
Uh-huh.
Especially
Get
about
out.
Traffic
Get
and
out.
Construction. Did you see all the construction down here today? I'm not gonna get into the details, but there's a lot of construction down here.
Yes, there is.
Okay. So went to Busch Gardens. We went to, I got one of these two-day pass type deals on Groupon, right? Where you save a bunch of money. The
I think that's Ted's company.
Oh, is it?
I think Transparent Ted Leonsis, has a piece of Groupon.
Oh, I did not know that.
Or at least
that.
He did at one point.
Okay.
I don't know if he still does.
I mean, I use Groupon all the time. Here's the one bad part. The dummy that I am. I booked this as a surprise for my kids.
Right.
Not realizing that their passes from SeaWorld that they bought last year for a vacation in early September that I met them down in Orlando where my family lives were good for a year. So they could have gotten into Busch Gardens in Water Country, USA, Tommy, on Wednesday and Thursday when we went down there without me buying the extra passes.
So you really got a deal, didn't you?
Yeah, I got a Chris Russell type Groupon deal. Now, that being said, what we did was A couple of my my daughter's best friend and her mom came down for the day on Thursday, so somebody did actually use the passes, but okay. I still had to pay them, right? So we drive down on Wednesday. You know, it's about a 3.5 hour drive, whatever. It's fine. We get there. You know, it's nuclear hot again. Go to Water Country USA, which is a really cool water park. It's affiliated with Busch Gardens. It's right there. It's about a mile apart. Everything goes okay, whatever. Wednesday's fine. Thursday, we go to Busch Gardens. And again, it's like 97 degrees, whatever it is. And my son, he, you know, special needs, he can't really walk a long distance without his knees hurting, his ankle hurting, whatever. So I got to push him at about 180 pounds because he's now 18 years old. I got to push him in his special needs wheelchair. And that means uphill. That means downhill, which sounds easy, but it's not for anybody that's pushed, you know, somebody of some significant amount of weight in a wheelchair going down a steep hill. It's murder on your ankles and your calves. So your boy here has been like my legs have, like people have felt like they were on fire. I can handle the heat. I can handle some of the humidity. You know what I can't handle? My calves and my ankles in the kind of condition that they have been in for the last couple of days, Tommy, because man, did I get a workout. I tripled my step count on my old step meter thing on my cell phone.
Let me ask you a question.
Ooh, it was a long day.
Did you go on any rides, Russell?
I did.
All right.
Okay, so let me get to that. Because I'm a guy of larger size, I could not get onto the one ride my son loves more than anything, Apollo Chariot. I just couldn't make it work. I tried. I couldn't. So what I did was I got onto a teacup ride, a spinning teacup ride. You know, the ones that go zoom, boom, back and forth. I don't know what they're called. So we did that together, and I got dizzy, and I thought I was going to throw up. Uh-huh. We went on a virtual 3D ride that takes you through, like, this enchanted forest thing. I got dizzy and felt like I was going to throw up. And that was when I said, enough. I'm not doing
roller coasters?
I don't do roller coasters. I tried to. I tried to go on Apollo's Chariot, which is his favorite ride. He went on it 12 times, Tommy. 12. I got dizzy just watching it. I was like, yeah, I'm now, willing to go on it once.
Did you go on roller coasters when you were a kid?
Occasionally. It's never been my thing.
Okay.
Honestly, it's never. Like, theme parks and amusement parks have never been my favorite thing to go to. I mean, I largely, obviously, go for my kids. Busch Gardens, I justify. I don't know how others who have this kind of fear, paranoia, or uncomfortableness, I justify it by it's a cool little trip around. You know, you get a little culture experience. You go to Italy, you go to France, you go to Germany. We went to, you would love this. They have, you know, as part of the Germany section, they have a brew house type, you know, Oktoberfest type thing. A huge, you know, so you get, like, as part of the meal plan, you get a bratwurst, a knockwurst, you get the German potatoes, you get free beer samples. You know, I took part in that. I can tell you that much. You, I mean, and it's air conditioned and they put on a German dance show and whatever. That's the kind of entertainment that I do.
I thought you'd be back with stories about roller coasters and all kinds of stuff.
Here's the thing, Tommy. I was willing to go on them if he would have gone on, like, the Loch Ness Monster or there's a wooden roller coaster. But I was thinking, now that we're doing this show together for however long that lasts, and I know we're both out next weekend, maybe we could take a show trip and go on a roller coaster. We'd take Jester, take PJ, me, you, and let's go to the local theme park, Great American, whatever, go down to King's Dominion, wherever we've got to go.
There's one in Landover, Six Flags.
Let's
right
do
there.
It, baby.
Dan Snyder's old place.
Oh, yeah. I think we should do a show. I think we should do a live show from whatever their famous roller coaster is, so we could go topsy-turvy, upside down, and then I'll puke all over people because I'm all nervous and sick and anxious.
Listen, Russell, doing a show with you is a roller coaster, okay? So that's the only roller coaster I need. Look, today is an important day in the history of mankind.
Yes, it
not
is.
Not just America, but the literally the history of mankind. It's the 50th anniversary of when Apollo 11, the astronauts, Neil Armstrong, and then Buzz Aldrin, but Neil Armstrong took the first step after they landed on the moon. One small step for man, one giant step, I believe, although this has been disputed, is exactly what he said. One giant step for mankind. Now, were you alive? You weren't even alive.
No.
Okay.
No.
You see, I remember watching this on TV in Miami, Florida. I spent, when I was 14 and 15, I had an older sister, about 8 years older.
Okay.
And she was working in Florida, so I got to spend my summers down there.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I remember watching it at nighttime, literally watching them take the step out. Very blurry, very, you know, not real clear. But
because it was the story I read, 11:40 at night.
Yeah, it was nighttime. It was very late at night.
And you knew it was happening, obviously.
Oh, yeah, I was 15 years old.
But I'm saying, like, the build up to it was, it's going to happen at this time, or did they not know when it was going to happen? I don't
remember exactly, but we were prepared for it. We were waiting for it. We knew it was going to happen, and we knew it was a big deal. I think even for a 15-year-old, I recognized how things had changed after that. One way or the other, with men walking on the moon. And, you know, I didn't get down to see it, but last night on the mall, they did this remarkable thing where they projected on the Washington Monument the actual moon rocket, you know, landing on the moon.
In
other words, they projected the film on the side of the Washington Monument, of the entire monument, made it look like the lunar rocket.
Oh, how cool is that?
And they had big screens all over the mall. You know, I wish I could have come down for it, but apparently it was packed, and it was like 97 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but so it's a big deal. And I you know, as much as everybody's been through in their lifetime, nobody has... There's really been nothing to equal that. There's never been any kind of accomplishment since then in my lifetime that I've seen that literally equals walking on the moon.
I mean, some of the facts that, you know, kind of get lost, like, I didn't even know this. You know, I'm looking at USA Today from a couple of days ago that I picked up, you know, like the picture, obviously, with the American flag planted and the flagpole. And, you know, it says you can't see the stars in the sky because sunlight... reflecting off the moon's surface washes out the starlight. So you can't see that. Obviously, the flag, there was, you know, it's not drooping because you have the crossbar so kind of supporting it from being planted in. Jester says he's got the audio of this. So why don't we, just for memory's sake and
absolutely
kind of reminiscent sake, being that it is the 50th year anniversary today, again, July 20th, 1969, technically tonight at 11:40 p.m. is the actual mark 50 years ago, but let's hear that.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
One giant leap for mankind.
As you could hear the audio kind of breaking up there a little. So when you see this as a, what, 15-ish?
15-year-old.
When you see this going on, are you like, I mean, obviously you're blown away, of course, but what, like, for days after, is that all that people talked about?
You
could consume and all that you could think about?
What people were talking about afterward was what's next.
Yeah.
If you're walking on the moon now, what's next?
Right.
When are we going to Mars? When are we going to the rest of the solar system? And none of that has happened. Just like we all thought when we watched the Jetsons when we were kids that we'd be in flying cars by the time we were adults, and that hasn't happened.
Meet George Jetson.
Yeah. So space travel hasn't really progressed like everybody thought it would. But speaking of walking on the moon, Russell.
Yes.
I think the Washington Nationals manager was walking on the moon last night.
That's a good transition. We are actually going to get into that. Dave Jagler, one of the two voices of Nationals baseball here on 106.7 and the Nationals Radio Network, will join us after the bottom of the hour, but we'll set the table, Tommy, from a very frustrating And you want to say typical loss? Maybe some will describe it that way for different reasons, maybe for multiple reasons, but a very frustrating loss, I think, that's safe. So we wanted to open up with that. We will get into Tommy Shepard and the Wizards and a weird week for them, trying to make some, I think, positive news after making a lot of negative news. We'll get into all of that, plus Tyreek Hill, but the Nationals with a frustrating loss last night in Atlanta. We'll come back and set the table for Dave Jagler next on The Fan. All right, along with Tom Lavero, I'm Chris Russell. Jim Chester on the other side of the glass. We're with you until noon. Nats insider Dan Coco at that point. And Tommy, that brings us into, as we set the table again for Dave Jagler from Atlanta, just after After 9:30, who, of course, you can hear tonight in every game, or pretty much every game when he's not on special assignment, as they call it, meaning working on TV, as he was a couple of times last weekend. You can hear him and Charlie tonight at 7:20, I believe, his first pitch for game three of a four-game set in Atlanta. The Nationals were half dead, basically, for this game. They could not do anything against Julio Teheran, and the Braves were kind of chipping away, a run in the fourth, a run in the fifth, and a run in the sixth, and it just looked like your normal, you know, Friday night. Like, Atlanta's a first-place team. They're a really good team, and they're just going to win a game, and it just looked like, okay, well, you know, get them tomorrow after a big win to open up the series on Thursday. And then the Nationals make a big comeback and tie things up on one magical swing of the bat from Victor Robles. But while that gives you the ultimate elation, Tommy, it leads to ultimate frustration from that point on with Fernando Rodney and specifically the manager, Davey Martinez, taking a lot of hits.
I think this was the worst one in terms of perception of all, because it's you can't easily explain this one away. Look, I'm a big believer in knowing that managers have conversations with relievers. Good managers do this and let them know how you might be used that night. And these conversations are things that fans are not privy to. So sometimes there are a lot of times they don't understand why a guy's used or not used. But the logic of possibly using Fernando Rodney for two innings and not having Sean Doolittle ready to face Freddie Freeman, no matter when you made those plans, pregame, middle of the game, eighth inning, it's a logical fail, and it's kind of indefensible at this point. I understand Davey's probably fallen in love with Fernando Rodney because he's one of the few guys he's been able to bring in the eighth inning who doesn't want blow a game wide open for him, but you got to recognize the limitations here. And he hadn't gone two innings, I think, in the major leagues in a couple of years. Davey said he did it when he was in the minor leagues for when he first got signed. But I mean, it was a terrible move, a terrible look, and you could make the case it cost them the game.
Now, here's I guess what we'll say. Is Rodney got out of, you know, any damage in the eighth inning.
Yes.
But he worked a lot of deep counts in that
inning.
So the pitch count was already elevated. I forget exactly what it was. It was in the high teens, like right, because every one of the outs that he recorded, Austin Riley a ground out, Tyler Flowers struck him out swinging again on a full count, and Charlie Culberson grounding out to end the inning, and he, you know, pinch hit for Anthony Swarzak, that was also, again, a full count. So he worked deep into counts in the eighth. Then you tie the game, and okay, maybe you're not expecting that, but you have to obviously have that in the back of your mind.
Yes, you
do. The one thing that I will say, right, is For Davey, he said after the game that they liked the matchups better instead of having Doolittle, a closer. Now, normally you would go in a tie game, right, to your closer at home in the ninth inning.
Yes.
But you don't always do that on the road.
Right.
As a matter of fact, a lot of managers don't do that. So some part of that decision makes a little sense. You want to save Doolittle for when you have the lead on the road. Okay. He also said, hey, we liked the pitch, the matchups of Fernando Rodney versus Acuna to lead off the ninth inning. Fernando Rodney versus Dansby Swanson to second in the inning. But when you walk Acuna, and we all know what leadoff walks turn into, and when you then give up a little punch single to Dansby Swanson and you have Freddie Freeman up, this is where I think people are like, wait a second. How in the world did you not... If it's not Sean Doolittle, because you don't want to go to Sean Doolittle, Tommy, in a 3-3 game on the road, you've got to have a left-hander. You got 14 of them out in the bullpen.
Yeah, you must know
right?
The damage that Freeman can do. You've got to be able to. You can't have Fernando Rodney facing Freddie Freeman,
right?
In that situation,
you've already used Sip. I don't know if you want to go to Matt Grace at that point. And obviously, you're down Venters.
Obviously
that would have been
he didn't.
Yeah,
but that's part of the limitations of the bullpen.
Yeah.
It's still very limited. It didn't help all the confusion when Davey was trying to reposition Juan Soto
right.
out in left field
right.
and the bullpen. Obviously thinking, like Doolittle thought, well, they're going to call me in
mm-hmm.
to face Freeman. He thought that, you know, he had to hurry up and get ready because he thought he was coming in. So the bullpen thought they were calling on Davey was calling them. But that wasn't the case.
Right. Because Masson showed like the video.
Yeah.
And you see Doolittle not even on the rubber.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like throwing
in
front
panic.
Of. Yeah, absolutely. And
yeah.
there was like the bullpen. Who's the bullpen coach?
Henry Blanco.
He was all confused. He's like motioning
yeah.
like, what, you know, what do you want us to do? Like, but here's my question. You've been around baseball a lot longer than I have. You talked to all these people. Again, if you don't trust Grace, Venters is on the injury list. You've
right.
already used Sip. And you don't ideally want to use Doolittle. Is it egregious to, again, stick with the plan of I don't want to use Doolittle in that spot, knowing that you have Freddie Freeman and potentially Nick Markakis up in between? Josh Donaldson is obviously in there, but you have Freddie Freeman, and then you have potentially Nick Markakis. And Davey Martinez said, look, even though I didn't want to use Doolittle, and I like the matchups of Fernando Rodney, I didn't want to bring in Doolittle and then have to pinch hit for him, meaning he couldn't use him in the 10th inning. But then he said, well, we were prepared to make a double switch if it got to Markakis, meaning bringing in Doolittle. Is it egregious if you don't have trust in Matt Grace to not have somebody else, another right-hander, because you know Fernando Rodney is 42. We talked about this last
yeah.
week and is now on inning number 2 of work and doesn't have command of the strike zone, Tom.
Listen, there's no more important moment in that game than when Freddie Freeman is up the bat.
Right.
Okay. So you can't think about Doolittle in the 10th inning. You need to be ready for that moment. The only moment that mattered was then.
Essentially, that's your save
yes.
moment is what you're
yes.
saying. Yes.
Yeah.
And I agree with you.
Yeah. So, and you know, he just got crucified on social media. Look, one thing I don't understand, and I'll never understand this. Well, I think I understand why it happens. Is, you know, I can't tell you how many responses and reads I got from fans on social media that want to fire Davey.
Just because of last night.
And part of the problem is, part of the problem is everyone thinks they're a manager at home now
yes.
with all the data. But also, a lot of fans judge baseball like football. They're used to every game being the most important thing
mm-hmm.
because there's only 16 games
mm-hmm.
in a football season.
Mm-hmm.
There's 162 games in
right.
a season. It was a terrible night, but it was one night. You know,
I mean, they
turned
more than fair.
And you know, look, they could erase that night and that memory with a win today. And then if they win today and Sunday, then they sweep. No, they don't sweep. They win three out of four. But it turns out they're not going to have Scherzer on Sunday
exactly.
because Scherzer's got an injury that. You know, this is sort of like reminiscent of Sean Doolittle last year. Before the All-Star break, Sean Doolittle had a little foot problem
mm-hmm.
that was going to keep him out of the All-Star game. He wasn't activated until September.
He missed over 2 months.
Yes.
yes.
So, I mean, here we are with Scherzer again. Him thinking he was going to be able to pitch on Sunday, and he's not pitching.
We're going to cover this more in detail with Dave Jagler. I would just... I would just end this segment by saying I understand everything that you just said and the magnitude, I guess, of people blowing this into a mountain of a loss and all this stuff. Let me just say this. Yes, it was one of 162 last night, but because you don't have Scherzer in this series, you don't know when you're going to get him, and because you had this great performance in a clutch situation with two out and two strike by Victor Robles, because you had all that and because it's the opponent that it is, I think last night's much bigger than just one game, one loss, one moment, one bad decision by Davey Martinez.
If they win the next two, that's all it is.
It's a lot to ask Anibal Sanchez and Austin Vogt.
And they've got how many games left with the Braves?
I know.
Like about 10 games left with the Braves.
I know, but it's a lot to ask Anibal Sanchez and Austin Vogt to win these next two games. All right, Dave Jagler will join us live from Atlanta. One half of the Nationals radio broadcast team that you can hear here on 106.7 The Fan, including tonight, of course, Game 3, as we mentioned. Straight ahead, we will do that next with Dave Jagler from Atlanta, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Stay tuned. And we welcome you back along with Tom Lavero. I'm Chris Russell, Jim Jester on the other side of the glass, and happy 10th anniversary to 106.7 The Fan. We'll get into that. Our beloved program director, Chris Kinert, CK, just pumping that up on his Twitter. So we will get into how the format has kind of evolved over the last 10 years. But it was not a happy ending to the Nationals-Braves game, if you're a Nats fan and player last night. And here to talk about it with us is part of the broadcast team that you hear on pretty much every Nationals game right here on 106.7 The Fan and the Nationals Radio Network. It is Mr. Dave Jagler, and he's with us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Good morning, Jags. Thanks for your time. How are you?
Sure, you got it, Chris. Good to be on with you, Tom.
Absolutely. Thank you for waking up with us early. Jags, last night, look, you thought you had one in terms of at least extending the game. Maybe you sneak one out of there after kind of being half dead in terms of the offense for much of the game. Robles hits a bomb. I'm sure we're going to get into his evolution, if you will, but then it ends in such frustrating fashion. I guess, how do you put everything that you saw in person together last night about how things unfolded with Fernando Rodney out there for a second inning and clearly not having enough command of the strike zone to work his way out of a tough jam?
Yeah, I mean, I heard what Davey Martinez said, that he liked those matchups and he didn't want to go to the closer in a tie game on the road. I was surprised with the Rodney came back into the game, honestly, because he had not been asked to do that at any point this season, and only twice last year had he pitched more than one inning in an outing. And since he's starting the 10th inning, you're asking him to pitch, or the 9th inning, you're asking him to pitch two innings. The last time he completed two innings in a relief outing was 2013. Now, on the flip side of that, he had not pitched since last Friday. So it had been a week. He was well rested. He threw 17 pitches in the bottom of the 8th inning and was very effective in that inning. So I'm guessing that he assumed he would be as effective in the 9th inning and unfortunately was not. I'm not opposed to pitching the closer in a tie game on the road. What was interesting to me, and I don't know unless I missed something, we kind of had a monitor on in our back of the booth that shows the Nationals bullpen, and Sean Doolittle was the only pitcher warming up as the top of the 9th inning was unfolding. Now, after Robles hits the home run, they were going to pinch hit for Yan Gomes. Let's say if Robles got a hit or drew a walk, and you still had a chance to, you needed a hit to keep the game going. They were going to pinch hit Kurt Suzuki for Yan Gomes. Robles hits the home run to tie the game. It's now 3-3. You only have two bench players left, Suzuki and Brian Dozier. They put Gomes back up to bat for himself, and they put Dozier on deck to bat for the pitcher. So if for some reason Gomes gets on base, either by a walk or a hit, they're going to pinch hit for Rodney. So at that point, wouldn't Doolittle come into the game anyway? Or was somebody going to scramble and get ready, be it Javi Guerra or somebody else, if Dozier doesn't get a hit and the game is still tied but Rodney's no longer in the game? And I never saw anybody warm other than Doolittle. So what was going to happen if that pitcher spot came up? So it looked like Doolittle was going to come into a tie game at that point, again, unless someone scrambles to get ready. And then when Rodney got in trouble, Doolittle got back up again, which it didn't. That whole thing kind of didn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, stuff goes on in the dugout that we're not aware of. Maybe someone's available, not available, that we're not aware of. But I was surprised how that inning played out. And clearly, Rodney was not the same pitcher coming back for the second inning that he was in the first inning. Maybe he mentally shut it down, figuring, I did my job. Mm-hmm. There's no way I'm going to pitch the ninth inning. Either we're going to lose this game, or we're going to take the lead, or I'm going to be pinch hit for, and Doolittle's going to be in the game anyway. So, that was frustrating how it played out. If somehow Doolittle pitches that ninth inning, and they get to the 10th, there's no guarantee they're going to win. But I am not philosophically opposed to throwing the closer in a tie game on the road, especially considering the Braves had used their top three relievers. And it was the top of the order in the bottom of the ninth inning. So there's a lot of things that you can debate either way. That's the beauty of this game. It's easy to analyze what's got to happen. In the heat of the moment, they chose Rodney. Unfortunately, he was very ineffective after being very effective the previous inning.
Listen, Dave, a couple of things. One thing, the Atlanta fans were roasting their manager for his bullpen management as well and keep throwing a closer out there who's getting lit up whenever they put him out there. And I maintain that when you show me the manager in baseball who's good at managing a bullpen, please let me know. because generally, everybody complains about their manager and how they run the bullpen. That said, it was a bad, bad look for Dave Martinez at that moment when there's no more important moment than when Freddie Freeman is up at that plate. And you've got to have Doolittle already in the game in that situation, or at least coming into the game and in that situation. And here's the one last thing. You can't get caught up in Fernando Rodney mania. Okay, what you've got to think is you're the manager sitting there thinking every inning I get out of Fernando Rodney is found money.
Well, I mean, you throw a lot of things out there, Tom. I mean, the one thing that will make a bad manager look bad is a bullpen that's not good.
Right.
If you have a good bullpen, you'll look like a great manager.
Yes.
Because when you put that guy in, whoever that guy is, and for any team, and he gives it up, well, it's the manager who put him in that spot, and he should have put the other pitcher in, or he should have left the pitcher who got the side in order 1-2-3. And on the Atlanta side, their eighth inning reliever Swarzak, who's been pretty much untouchable since he was picked up in a trade, well, he was pinch hit for. So what do you want the guy to do? Do you want him to double switch Josh Donaldson out of the game, or Ozzie Albies out of the game, so that Swarzak can pitch two innings, which is not something that he usually does? I mean, that's their closer, and until they get someone else to be the closer, he's going to win and lose with that guy. You talk about the Freeman at bat. To me, if you're going to bring Doolittle in to face Freddie Freeman, he should have been in to start the inning.
Yes, he should have been.
It was the top of the order, and again, if it's the bottom of the order, maybe you make a little bit of a different decision. But Acuna had a great game. He was 3-for-4 in that game at that point. You've got to get him out, because if he gets on base, he's a stolen base threat. And then obviously Freeman is coming, and Donaldson is swinging the bat well. So the most dangerous part of their lineup, obviously, is the top of the order. So in theory, you'd like your best guy there. You know, they're obviously monitoring Doolittle's workload. They're concerned about that. But Doolittle has not pitched since last Saturday. So he was fresh. If he needed to go potentially more than an inning, that was on the table last night. So there are a lot of ifs and buts and what ifs. And unfortunately, what they chose to do didn't work out.
Dave Jagler, one of the voices of the Washington Nationals, who you can hear here, including tonight, tomorrow's series finale on The Fan, the Nationals radio network. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Dave Jagler. He's got lots of cool pregame notes that he always drops, usually about a half an hour or so before first pitch. If you're a stat head like most of us are, you can get that all on Twitter, again, at Dave Jagler. All right, Jags. So, you know, last night we were kind of talking about this before we brought you on. You know, Tommy says, you know, right, one of 162, it's different than football. But I would argue, because the Braves have been so good, while the Nationals have been so good, and because it's the Braves, and because it's the road, and because you have the Robles home run, last night was much more important, especially considering they no longer have Scherzer for the rest of this series. And now you have to beat a guy like Soroka, who's been really hot, with Anibal Sanchez tonight, who's been great himself, but also Austin Voth on Sunday. So to me, I guess I looked at last night and then the rest of this weekend as super, super urgent, not just a couple of games against a team in your division. Is that all fair?
Well, certainly, because you're the team trailing, and if there's some significant ground to be made up, and the head-to-head meetings are the best opportunity to make those up. But I think the mentality that we have on the outside is probably different than what the players are. They're not looking at it as saying, oh my goodness, we've got to face Mike Soroka tonight. We have no chance to win. Mm-hmm. Probably half the guys didn't even know who was going to be pitching in tonight's game or who was going to be pitching on Sunday's game. So this team has done a real good job, and there has to be some credit given to the manager here in Davey Martinez, in that in this stretch, if they've had a tough loss, they've been able to shake it off pretty well and not let that affect them going forward. Yeah, in the big picture, you would have liked to have, or you would like to have, two of the first three games in the win column, because Scherzer's not going to be pitching the finale. I mean, if you're sitting there 1-2 going into Sunday and you had Max going, you're like, okay, well, we'll get a split and we'll go get him on the next homestand when the Braves are in D.C. for three. But, you know, they lose last night. If they lose tonight, then you're certainly potentially an underdog going into Sunday's game and potentially in line to drop 3 of 4. Now, if they drop 3 of 4 and they leave Atlanta 8.5 games back, it's still not a death knell to their division title hopes, because there are 2 months to go in this season. And again, hopefully Scherzer's not missing that much time. So, yeah, these are big games because they're the team trailing in the standings. But it's not to the point yet where you're going to risk, for example, throwing Scherzer out there less than 100%, or, you know, just, you know, throw Sean Doolittle for 45 pitches or some cockamamie scheme just because you have to win tonight because you're worried you don't have Max on Sunday. So, yes, big games, but there are going to be bigger games to come. And the series in D.C. will be bigger than this one. And if the Nationals are where they want to be, the 7 times they play in September will be bigger than these games.
Yeah, you mentioned that they have been good at bouncing back. I mean, let's look at they got pummeled by the Orioles Wednesday night. They go to Atlanta and then turn around and pummel the Braves Thursday night. You know, the one thing, the way it turned out for this series, though, the key, look, Dave Martinez said a couple months ago when I asked him, how do you climb back into a race, is one of the things you do is you can't go on 3 or 4 game losing streaks. Mm-hmm. And their starting rotation, their top three, should prevent them from doing that. So, but ideally, you'd like to have one of those three pitching on Sunday, but you don't. I might want to point out, though, last time Austin Vogt faced the Braves,
he was good.
He was tremendous.
He was good.
Yeah. So. He was. And he did fine the other night against Baltimore. He's taken a step up in weight class for this lineup on Sunday, a lineup that did, you know, we'll see him now for a second time. It's going to be, you know, bright lights for him with the Sunday night national audience there and a big game on the road. So hopefully he'll be up to the task. And, you know, with the Scherzer thing, hopefully it's just now the one start. I mean, first right. It was going to be a couple of days, and now it's a little more concerning. So until Max is out there throwing a bullpen session, we don't know when he's coming back.
And that is a very big looming question in addition to the bullpen and the trade deadline and everything going on with the Washington Nationals. You can hear Dave Jagler again tonight with Charlie Slows right here on 106.7 The Fan and the Nationals Radio Network. Game 3 of a 4 game set in Atlanta at SunTrust Park. Jax, thanks for getting up early with us. Appreciate it. Have a great day down there. Try and stay cool somehow, some way. And we'll see you when you get back here for Monday and Colorado.
Thanks a lot,
yeah,
Dave.
No chance of staying cool. You got it, Chris. Good to talk
exactly.
to Tom. See you guys.
Thank you, Dave Jagler. Again, you can hear him on the call.
He's one of the best.
Tonight.
Yeah. Him and Charlie. Oh. You're so lucky to have
Absolutely.
Those guys do the games for this team.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. And somehow, some way, speaking of weather, it was like 74 degrees at game time last night
in Atlanta
after the rain.
But apparently there was a fire in the distance that kept getting closer.
Oh, I think it had
something to do with General Sherman. I'm not sure.
Interesting. All right. When we come back, we will get a couple of boxing notes in. The
yes.
sweet science, one sad and one to look ahead. We'll do that before 10 o'clock, and then we will get into Tyreek Hill and that mess that the NFL is now dealing with. We'll do all that. Tom Lavero, I'm Chris Russell. Good to have you with us on a Saturday morning on The Fan. All right. Along with Tom Lavero, I'm Chris Russell. Good to have you with us on a Sunday morning. Thank you very much to Dave Jagler for joining us, and thank you for listening and joining us on this Saturday morning. We'll go out to Kansas City, bottom of next hour. We'll talk to my pal Soren Petros, a very good radio talk show host. He's been all over the Tyreek Hill situation. We'll get into Tyreek Hill and the NFL's decision not to suspend him, which was announced yesterday after the top of the hour. But Tommy, I know you've been a longtime fan and avid observer, and you've done a lot of work, and you've been at a lot of big fights. Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker unfortunately passed away this week, and there's, let's be honest, there's no good way to have your life, and this is about one of the worst.
Yeah, 55 years old, struck by a car last Sunday night in his hometown there, I think, in Norfolk. Ironically, as we speak right now, his body is laid out to rest for viewing at the Scope Arena in Norfolk. The Scope was where he defended his title a number of times as the hometown guy. I was fortunate enough to see one of those title defenses, his second fight against the great Buddy McGirt, which he gave Buddy McGirt a boxing lesson and dominated him. And the whole town was just going crazy that night watching their guy, Pernell Whitaker. You know, for about 5 years, Ring Magazine had him as the best pound-for-pound fighter in all of boxing from 93 through 97. Look, just like every other sport, we don't truly appreciate defense as much as offense.
Yeah.
And in boxing, it's really the case. And Pernell Whitaker was a defensive genius. I mean, and when I mean defense, I don't mean running from a guy in the ring. I mean standing in front of him and making him miss.
Just a good tactical defensive type guy.
And Pernell was the best. Maybe Willie Pep, the great Willie Pep, a lightweight from featherweight from, you know, years past, was better. Mm-hmm. But Pernell's, Whitaker's the best I ever saw. He's one of the greatest fighters I ever saw. I saw him fight. He got robbed three times. He lost four fights in his career. He got robbed in three of them. The worst robbery was his fight with Julio Cesar Chavez in, I think it was 91, in the Alamo Dome, where it was declared a draw when everyone clearly knew that Whitaker won. He ran into the problem of Don King politics there. Mm. King promoted Chavez.
King was a politician? Yeah. Really?
He is now.
I would have never known that Don King wasn't truly on the up and up.
So, basically, he engineered that.
Right.
But then I saw another robbery. I saw Whitaker up close ringside in 97 when he fought Oscar De La Hoya. And I thought Pernell Whitaker won that fight, too. And that's another decision that he got robbed of, this time from the other bookend of corruption, Bob Arum, who had an influence over those judges. And I just have such fond memories of watching him. I truly appreciate, you know, George Foreman had the greatest quote about boxing. He said, boxing is like jazz. The better it is, the less people appreciate it. Mm. And particularly for judges, it's very difficult for them to judge defensive of a guy who's a great defensive fighter.
Right.
Pernell Whitaker was a good puncher, though. He piled up points. He was aggressive when it came to throwing punches as well. But nobody I ever saw was able to slip punch. Floyd Mayweather's one of the best.
I was just going to ask you, how does he compare in your eyes?
He's not as good as Pernell. Mm. Not as good as
meaning
Pernell.
Meaning, money's not as good as Pernell in terms of being a defensive fighter.
Yeah.
But he's a better,
I take Pernell Whitaker over Floyd Mayweather 7 days a week.
Straight up, okay.
Yeah. And actually, one of...
That opinion means something to me because I know how much you love boxing,
but it's
how much
subjective.
You've covered it, and how much you've seen it.
I know.
Well, I understand.
But it's very subjective.
The world is subjective, but you are not just somebody saying that. You're somebody who has invested a lot of your life and a lot of passion into the sweet science.
Now,
so that means something.
One of Floyd Mayweather's nemesis, one of his old opponents, who he defeated when they fought in the ring, is fighting tonight. 40-year-old Manny Pacquiao, who's been on the comeback trail, had an impressive win over Adrian Broner a few months ago, is fighting undefeated welterweight champion Keith Thurman. I'm not a big Pacquiao fan.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of doubts and suspicions about Pacquiao. Be honest with you, I think if you cut him open, Ben Johnson would come falling out. So, and I think it's going to catch up to him against Thurman, a younger, stronger fighter. I think Pacquiao's going to lose, but apparently that doesn't matter because win or lose, he supposedly has a fight lined up in England this fall against Amir Khan that will make him a lot of money as well. But I'm going to watch it. I don't generally get pay-per-view anymore.
You're going to watch this one?
But I'm going to watch this one. This one I think will be worth paying attention to.
But more like because Thurman. You don't like Pacquiao, not because you want to see Pacquiao and whether he can climb the Thurman mountain. Because Thurman's undefeated.
I think it'll be an interesting fight.
Okay.
I think it'll be a good fight.
So you give a pretty decent chance to Pacquiao to win?
I don't give him a decent chance to win. I think it'll be a good fight,
okay.
though.
Okay. All right, that's coming up tonight, pay-per-view from Sin City, if you want to check that out. When we return on the other side, top of the hour, again, Tyreek Hill, very controversial decision, non-decision by the NFL. We'll get you the statement. He had something to say, and then we will get into whether or not Tyreek Hill should get a contract extension. Yeah, that is some buzz, and that is some talk going around the sports landscape on this Saturday morning. Along with Tom Lavero, I'm Chris Russell. Good to have you with us. We reach the 10 o'clock mark right now on The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.